This is Lori Prox here with Michael Johnson, the Commissioner of Education for the State of Alaska, and also Jim Nygaard, our school superintendent. So, Jim, thanks for bringing Mr. Johnson into us this morning.
This has been a treat. I appreciate Commissioner Johnson
coming in. He spent considerable time this morning with our staff, and then he's scheduled for later time with our school board. Give them a courtesy heads up on what's coming down from the department as well as the state. So I really appreciate him coming in.
All right. And the purpose of the visit is, are you going to see a lot of school districts around the state?
Well, at the first of all, thank you for allowing me to be here. It's great to be in Valdez. Valdez is like home, and so it's great to be back in the home neighborhood. Yes, last week I was up in Fairbanks at their in-service and with Yukon Koyukuk in their in-service, but Jim has been a mentor and a friend for many years, and so the opportunity to come and be with him in his in-service, I couldn't pass that up.
All right, and good connections there. You're from Glen Ellen, right? So give us your history, and you're relatively new to the state.
So I came up as a college student in summer and fell in love with Alaska, got a job as a teacher's aide in special education in the Copper River School District, went back out and got my master's in teaching, and came and Copper River gave me a job at Gakona School, and I was able to teach out there, and then in the Glen Allen School, became a principal, and then eventually superintendent of the Copper River School District. So I was in the Copper River School District for 20 years before I became commissioner last summer. So this is, I'm just about a year and 2 months into the job.
And how did that come about, becoming the commissioner?
There was an opening, and I talked to my wife about it, prayed, should we do this, applied, and went through the interview process. So you interview with the State Board of Education, and you also interview with the governor and lieutenant governor, and then was fortunate enough to be accepted.
And what is your interest in being a commissioner? What is it you bring to the table or you want to do in this position?
Well, who wouldn't want to be the commissioner in a state like Alaska, first of all? And then, you know, as commissioner of education, the job represents students. And Alaska has amazing students. We have hardy, just amazing kids in this state. And so the opportunity to work on their behalf on statewide policy issues was something that I was very interested in and have been loving the opportunity.
And what are the major issues that you're working on that you feel are going to move Alaska forward?
Well, in general, the question of what you know are the important issues right now. The most important policy issue for Alaska students is the need for a forward-looking, sustainable fiscal plan for our state. And the legislature, the governor, they're all working very hard on that, and that remains the priority. Other than that, this past year, we've spent a lot of time on ESSA, which is the Every Student Succeeds Act, and it is the federal education law that replaces No Child Left Behind. And so we have been spent the last year working with stakeholders, getting input to develop our own state plan for ESSA, and we'll be submitting that on September 18th of this year.
Can you explain to our listeners what No Child Left Behind? I know there were some severe critics of that. What were the main proponents of that did not work here in Alaska and that hopefully you're changing with this new ESSA? I forgot the... I'm horrible with acronyms, as
Every
Jim knows.
Student Succeeds Act, yes. So, excuse me. No Child Left Behind was a continuation of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which was first enacted in 1965, first really federal public education law of that sort, and really designed to make sure that all students have an opportunity for a good education, and that minorities, students that live in poverty, they all have equal access and get a good education. No Child Left Behind was just an iteration of that 1965 law and sought to do that. It added in testing at every grade and some accountability measures, and then a very prescriptive kind of formula for if a school needed improvement, what would happen for a school that needs improvement. ESSA updates the law again, so it's a new iteration. It backs off on the very prescriptive nature of No Child Left Behind and leaves more decisions at the local level. So if there are schools that need improvement, The decisions about what those improvement efforts look like will come from local conversations. And so there are some landmark elements of No Child Left Behind still in the Every Student Succeeds Act, but it seems to shift from more of a compliance prescriptive model to a more local control model. And, I'll just take the opportunity to thank Senator Murkowski and her staff and Senator Sullivan, who worked very hard to make sure that the law accommodated some of the concerns that Alaskans had, to have the flexibility to design improvement efforts in a way that reflected local culture and local issues.
And is it fair to say a lot of the mandates coming down, a lot of the, the No Child Left Behind, or these different things that teachers and administrators are really having to just spend all of their energies following the rules and lose sight of kids? This sounds like maybe with local control, you're expecting the focus to kind of come back and what the end goal is, rather than the labyrinth of, mm-hmm. of rules and regulations.
Right. Well, I wouldn't characterize it exactly that way, because let's say there was no such thing as Every Student Succeeds Act. We would still want accountability in our school system. It's public money to educate students, and so we would want accountability, even if that wasn't there. I think that a standardized statewide test is part of that kind of accountability. How is the money we're spending on public education working for our students? The way we find that out is we measure it, just like in any other sector, healthcare, whatever. We measure to find out what's working. And so there are elements of it that it's not something that if it went away, nobody would do, I hope, because there are things that are good for students in there. So are there, does it create more work for teachers? It probably shapes their work in ways that it wouldn't otherwise, but some of the work as a result of the law is work that they would be or should be doing anyway.
All right, and that probably leads us directly into testing, which was one of the things we wanted to talk about. We had a lengthy discussion with the last commissioner about PEAKS testing, and there was some transition there. And has that kind of settled in now? I think we went through a round last year, right? Mm-hmm. And we had some issues with getting test results back in a timely fashion and that. So explain where we are with testing at the statewide level.
So over the last 12 months, we've developed and implemented a brand new assessment in the state called PEAKS, Performance Excellent for Alaska Students. And the implementation administration of that back this spring went very well. Districts did a wonderful job of administering the test. And so we, as part of that process, thought really carefully, why do we give a statewide test? Why does the state come into Valdez's third grade classroom and administer a test? And there's three reasons. One is to inform policymakers, parents, teachers, the public on how our system schools are performing. Second, to inform improvement efforts. So in other words, we get the data back. Here's how the system's working. Here's how our schools are working. How do we improve those places that need improvement? And third, to make sure that there's equity. Are all the kids, every single student in the state, getting a good education? And so to do that, we need a thin layer of assessment. We didn't need a huge, huge assessment to do that as a summative end-of-the-year assessment. So we implemented PEAKS. It has gone well. The districts already have preliminary data that they can look at. The data will be released publicly in September on how our schools and districts perform in the state, and parents will get reports on their individual students. And those reports have been vetted and looked at by various stakeholders. Are these reports that will be helpful? And so I think we're in good shape. We haven't experienced the problems that unfortunately took place with AMP in terms of the reporting, and so we seem to be in a good spot.
And if I'm not mistaken, Jim, here at the Valdez level, your administrators and teachers were much happier with this PEAKS testing. Is that fair?
Yeah, it went really well. In fact, I've been reviewing the results of the PEAKS assessment, and overall very pleased with the performance for our kids and our staff. And I'm looking forward to getting that information out to the parents. I believe the deadline by department's regs are at the end of September, but I think ours is going to be out considerably sooner than that. And our district test coordinator, Amy McPherson, is drafting a letter as we speak, and preparing to get that information disseminated.
And we talked about the importance of parents saying, hey, let my child, you know, yes, I want my child to take the test, because it does provide valuable feedback at the local level as well as the state level, right, for the testing.
Yep.
All right. And we're talking with the state commissioner for Department of Education, am I saying that correctly, Michael Johnson, and we have Jim Nygaard, our school superintendent, in the studio as well. And we've talked a little bit about the testing, and I know there's a lot of discussion nationwide on Common Core. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions about, so when I say Common Core and in Alaska, how does it affect us? What's our take on Common Core?
Great question. Thank you for that. So I'm going to start and back up just a little bit before we talk specifically about Common Core. There's five essential questions that we need to answer for every student every single day in our schools. And those five questions are, number one, what do we want our students to know and do? And we answer that question with effective standards. Secondly, how will our students learn what we want them to know and do? We answer that with effective instruction and curriculum. Three, how will we know if our students have learned it? We answer that with effective assessments. What will we do if the students have not learned what we want them to know and do? We have effective interventions. What will we do if students already know what we want them to learn and do? We'll have effective enrichments and move them on. And the reason I say that is because it's really important when we have conversations about Common Core that we know which question is it we're talking about. It's not question number two, which is curriculum. Curriculum is how I teach what I want them to know and do. What I want them to know and do are standards. And the Common Core standards answer question number one. So the Common Core standards were a set of, you know, individual statements that describe what we want students to know and do at first grade, second grade, third grade. And there was controversy that arose around that, largely, I think, because sometimes folks confuse that with question number two. There were curriculum materials produced in the country that were really egregious. I mean, they were bad examples, but they were designed to teach the Common Core, but they weren't the Common Core. The Common Core just said, we want first graders to know phonics. Question number two, how will we teach them? There were teaching materials made that, you know, had some outlandish, very inappropriate ways to teach those standards. And so it created a lot of controversy, and rightly so. I mean, there was some, you know, inappropriate things there. And then there was a lot of federal policy kind of attached to the Common Core that added to people felt like was inappropriate. It's really important that we answer question number one. What do we want our students to know and do? And so the question becomes, if there's something about the Common Core we don't like, which standard is it? Is it teaching multiplication in third grade? Okay, let's talk about that standard and say, well, we think that ought to be in fourth grade or second grade, or we think that ought to be worded differently. I think those are great conversations to have for our students. So in Alaska, we have what we call, you know, Alaska standards. They're largely the Common Core. If you compared the two, they look a lot the same, but they have been modified and changed in some cases to reflect more of what a large group of people came together and said, you know, we need to change the wording, some of those things. But having said that, I think conversations about the standards are great. And so I expect that we will be having a review of our standards in the state coming up. It's part of what we've called the Alaska Education Challenge and some priorities we've set there. And we'll have that conversation, and that'll be a healthy, wonderful conversation in our state on what do we want our students to know and do, and how will that change? Some of it will look, even if it's worded different, like the Common Core. We want to teach phonics in first grade. We want to teach multiplication in third grade. But
it's important to be part of the national discussion as well, because, well, I guess Trump is talking about Common Core, so we know they're looking into that a little bit more, but on a national scene, Alaska can't really just say we're doing our own thing, because what if a student transfers from Alaska? So a lot of the reason for the nationwide standards are so that across the board in the United States, right, a second grader leaves one area, moves to another, and has the same skills. And that's very, I would imagine, you can speak to the importance of of that and hitting, being in line with some of the other areas around the nation.
Right. Fortunately, we have the legal authority to establish our own standards and make decisions about curriculum. Where local communities have the most influence is on question number two. How will we teach standards? And so you can pick your own curriculum. The state doesn't get involved in choosing curriculum, that sort of thing. Question number one, our communities have to think really carefully about, our state has to think about standards. So let's use an extreme example so folks understand. Let's say somebody said, well, we don't think we should teach multiplication in third grade like Common Core. We think you should wait till eighth grade. Well, we know that if we do that, we're putting our kids at a significant disadvantage because around the rest of the country and world, kids are learning multiplication much, much earlier. So do we have, can we make decisions about our standards? Absolutely. We can make those standards, but we want to make sure our kids are getting a comparable competitive education so that when they grow up, they have the skills and that they need to go out and get the jobs that they want. And, you know, we know that's even more competitive now. And so if we waited till eighth grade to teach multiplication, you would delay many other skills that would put them at a disadvantage. So, yes, you're absolutely right to say that we have to be very aware of how our standards would compare to, you know, other standards.
And you alluded to the fact that you're happy to be in Alaska, and that's a great financial position to be in. But also, I think we have students in many of the areas that can exceed the standards and actually can pursue some of those venues as well. So can you compare and contrast the Alaska education system with, you know, maybe give some examples of other, I know many of them are struggling for funding reasons. So we're in a pretty good position, I would imagine.
Oh, you mean financially?
Financially. And then I was going to ask you too, you know, who are you looking at in terms of who's doing some new stuff out there? Who's recreating the wheel?
Right. Well, let's start financially. You know, I'll say Alaska, there's so much opportunity in Alaska. But the most important policy question for our students is a forward-looking, sustainable fiscal plan. And our state has to figure that out. And I know the governor has been tireless working on that, as well as the legislature. And, you know, I know that it's been hard work, but I just thank them all that they recognize how important that is and they're working so hard on it. But
and just to recap for folks, the money did come through for the most part, what most school districts in Alaska were expecting.
Yes.
After, because there's always a big cry and but I just read Anchorage School District, right? They handed out a lot of pink slips and they're all being rehired. But so yay, they passed it and supported education, but years of doing the pink slips and that holds an emotional toll. I know some teachers who have gone through that for, you know, whatever, you know, years ago, or here, you know, we unfortunately have not had to do much of that here. But is that something that can change? The process is pretty brutal for planning.
That's why the most important policy question is a sustainable fiscal plan. Look, uncertainty is demoralizing. And we know that we need to educate kids next fall. And so to be uncertain about the funding for that job that we have is demoralizing, it's frustrating, and in my opinion, it's very inefficient. I mean, how do we plan ahead? You have superintendents like Jim Nygaard who've been around many years. They know how to pinch a penny. They know how to make funding work for every student in their district. But we hamper them when we create so much uncertainty in the system that they can't really plan out 2 years. If Jim had the luxury of planning out 3 or 4 years, he could create and think about efficiencies that you can't think about when you don't even know, you know.
And I think the discussion comes down to, we need more money, but really you need more time. I bet the administrators would say we need more time to know. But how do you get that message to, you know, what can you do from your office to get that message to the politicians, or what can people do out in the public listening? I think the public at large feels pretty helpless to, you know, we kind of, well, they haven't they haven't cut the budget, and we just keep spending, and we just keep spending, and what, you know, and I know we can elect some new officials, you know, ultimately, but, you know, is there anything that can, that you see in the foreseeable future that will change the system?
Well, you know, listen, our vision for public education should not rise and fall with the price of oil. And what we want for our students, the quality of education we want, should not be tied to the price of oil. And money helps, but that's not our vision for students. And, you know, our students are way ahead of us on that. You go to a graduation and you look at the students graduating, they're not walking across the stage worried about the price of oil. They're optimistic about their future. And we should be too. So it's, you know, from my office, what I want to do is inspire every community in this state to demand a great school. And I want to help create some unity around a statewide vision for a public education system and how important that is for our students. And then from there, you know, then I think the resources question and the resources conversation are more easy to have because they're built around a vision of what we want for our students.
All right. And you are working with politicians in this position, which is that new for you? You've been in a school system?
You know, it's new in form, but, you know, I worked with elected officials when I was superintendent also.
All right, and parents, of course, you're always answerable. Everyone's always answerable to someone.
Yep.
Your main things you'd like to see accomplished in 1 year, you know, what's the main thing you'd like to affect change in our system?
Well, I continue to think that our current context in Alaska creates unprecedented opportunity for us to think deeply about public education and not just skip a dollar across the surface of it. And so I think those of us that are leaders in today's context have a wonderful opportunity to lead. We have more opportunity right now than we've ever had before to deliver an equitable education to every single student in this state. Technology is part of that answer. It's not about the devices, but how we can use those devices to extend the benefit of great teachers to more and more of our students in the state. And so over the course of the next year, I'd just like to keep highlighting the great work that our districts are already doing to deliver education in new ways that reach more and more of our students with better and better quality instruction.
And as a parent listening out there, what are some of those new ways? You know, we can talk about politics and everyone gets glossy-eyed, but at the end of the day, you know, what would I maybe see in the classroom that's new and innovative that you're seeing around the state or perhaps here?
More offerings of courses. So, you know, let's just take an easy one, world languages. You know, small communities like Valdez and others only have so much capacity to have, you know, a variety of different world languages a student can take. But with world languages right now, you can have access to world language teachers on Chinese, Latin, all sorts of Mandarin. And so we've had students in school districts all across Alaska be able to access coursework that they couldn't access before. And then beyond that, vocational education kind of courses that students are able to access that they may not be available in their small community. So the ability for parents and students to shape their education and have that flexibility is, you know, it's a really exciting time for that.
Yeah, and we mentioned parents as well. I think a lot of times we say, you know, the school district is responsible for my kid, but there is an onus on parents as well. So parents are out there listening. What can parents do? You know, what are we not doing now? What can we do better to ensure our child's education?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, as commissioner, I will never assume that I love people's kids more than they do. And I think that it's just a matter of respect that folks love their kids. And so I don't want to presume that I know better or care about their kids more than they do, and even the local community. Parents need to connect with their local school folks, and whether they're homeschool parents or traditional model school parents, those sorts of things, the folks that work in education in our community have so much resource and connection and can help them make decisions about what's best for their kid. And so if you're trying to figure out what are my options, what can I do, what decisions can I make, the folks in your local school district can really help you think through those. And then other parents, connecting with them and the broader education community. So, the most important thing is to be engaged in every step of the way. Like, don't drop out of the picture when your kid gets to 11th grade. There's still lots of great decisions to be made. And students really value and appreciate when their parents are engaged that way.
And schools are different than they were years ago. There's sometimes not as much engagement, and the schools are providing far more than reading, writing, and arithmetic. They're providing lunches, they're providing breakfast, they're providing after-school care.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance that, and how do you address that? Because that is kind of a social shift, where the school, some needs are not being met for kids. So the school's stepping in, because how do you not fill those needs for children, right? But those all have to be paid for, and I don't know if we're at the tipping point of you can't take them home at night. So, that definitely with tightening budgets, the schools, I think it's come, every people have kind of come to expect, they should be doing all this stuff, but it's maybe, do you have discussions about that at the statewide level? Is some of that the responsibility of society in general or their parents, and how do you have that discussion? It's a tough, I'll bring it up because but it's really hard to bring up but that exists. There's the schools are doing more and more. And so, reading, writing, and arithmetic sometimes take a backseat to, providing some basic needs.
Well, I think clarity is a wonderful thing. And, the conversation you're, posing right now is really a local conversation. Each community needs to decide what services they can and should provide, and that doesn't have to look the same in every community. And so, when it comes to school, our primary responsibility is for student learning, and the other services that we provide are to support student learning. So, hungry kids don't learn well. When it comes to athletics, that's the motivator for some kids to learn. So, we do all those things not just because we want to have hockey. We do it because we want kids to learn, and, we use those other things to support that. But each community has to have those conversations. Okay, based on our context and our situation, what do we need to provide for students? And I think that's a wonderful thing about our country, is how much we do support and nourish and help our students. And then the conversations, have to come about what does that look like, how much does that cost, and what can we do?
And with budgeting concerns, I know, we have kind of an after-school snack program where kids can take things home, but that's funded outside the school system. And we have wonderful support from the city of Valdez with our facilities and things. So we're very, very fortunate there. And I'll ask you, you've seen a lot of school districts in Alaska, and Jim and I talked because this is Jim's last year as superintendent, and there's not a huge pool of superintendents out there. So, what position are we in now, and what can our school board do to get a good superintendent here and keep the things rolling?
Yeah, well, great question. Well, first of all, I hope the community and the board recognize how fortunate they've been to have Jim Nygaard as their superintendent at least the last few years, and take time to express that to him and recognize that, because that'll benefit them in the future. Recognizing great leadership will pay off when they pick a new superintendent. It's the most important question facing this board probably in the next 12 months is who their next leader is going to be. And I, at this point, I would just encourage them to jump right on it. The candidate pool is not super deep in the state, and Valdez is in a great spot. Jim has just really brought some stability and continuity and vision to Valdez, and so the burden is really on the Board of Education to make sure a year from now we're still sitting here having conversations about the great things happening in Valdez City Schools. So get on it very soon. And then I would strongly encourage that the board allow a 3, 4, 5 month period of time where they select somebody, and maybe they have an opportunity to come and work for those 4 or 5 months with Jim as a transition, and that'll make things go much, much smoother.
Jim's number on speed dial.
Right.
I think is might be mandatory.
That's right.
And a lot of times we'll have public forums where people can meet candidates or teachers meet candidates. And I know people have different criteria. You know, they want someone who has teaching experience. They want, but there's a lot more to it. There's management. I mean, you're managing a very large group of people. So, as the commissioner, you're going to hire a superintendent. What are your top job qualifications?
Number one, character. Hire for character, train for skills. And so absolutely number one would be character. And, you got a great example of that in your current superintendent. So, you know, my first three are character, character, character. After that, I think a clear understanding of the difference between management and leadership. And, you know, leadership is visionary. It's relationships. It's really focused on bringing folks along. And, you know, somebody once said to me, you're not leading if nobody's following. And that's the leadership part of it. And then, look, running a school district is complex stuff. And so you have to have management. You've got a lot of plates that you've got to keep balanced and keep going. And so you've got to have an understanding of school finance and the legislative process and facilities and boilers. And so, you know, you've got to have the management part of it too. But if you hire a great manager that doesn't have leadership, it's going to create problems. If you hire a great leader that can't manage, you're going to wind up with all sorts of financial and other stewardship issues. So you've got to find that right balance, but you got to start with character.
All right. Well, that's great advice. And I've run out of questions. Jim, did you have any that you wanted to address to
with
the commissioner?
You know, I just want to recognize the fact that he squeezed this into his schedule. And he had a great question and answer session with the teachers this morning. But I think the...
Can I ask what their questions were, what they were interested in?
Well, we're talking about the fiscal plan, where to go. We talked about testing and how our existing maps aligns with peaks or it doesn't. Talked about curriculum. And managing and developing curriculum, it was a good visit.
And I think sometimes people in the public don't realize out there that teachers are have ongoing education in, you know, they're still going to school and still learning different things. But a lot of times this, you know, all the law, that's all stuff you have to learn and manage and,
yeah.
And that's part of the management process, is you kind of have to pass that down. And I think in some school districts, maybe that doesn't happen as well. That is kind of a big hole that it takes a long time for it to be decided at maybe a national level or a statewide level. And for the actual curriculum to catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So, Jim, I kind of interrupted you.
I don't have a whole lot more to add. The state's in a challenging spot. I appreciate the conversation earlier of being engaged with your kids' education locally, and there's never a better time than right now. And when you think of school starting up next week and getting kids into a routine and such, it's never been more critical, because times are changing so fast. The world is spinning quicker and quicker, and Valdez had a lot going for it. So we need to take advantage of all that.
All right, and... we're heading into the school year. I mean, winter started 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah.
But so we should all be ready, I think, to go back to school this year. And it seems like our facilities and teachers are all ready to go, right?
We're ready to roll.
All right. Thanks a lot for coming in, Commissioner Michael Johnson. And if people do have questions or input, do you have resources you could share? You know, there's always websites I don't know about.
Yeah.
Or... And, you know, where do you put your information if people are interested?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. I think I have the best job in state government, and I'm having a great time. Love working with Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott and the rest of the cabinet. It's just a privilege to be the commissioner, so thank you so much. Folks can go to education.alaska.gov and find the department's website. You can go to the governor's website and find information on Alaska's Education Challenge. And then you can always call the office, and my email's on the website. You can click on there. And if none of that works, you can call Jim Nygaard right here in Valdez, and he has a bat phone right to me, and he can get in touch with me on the in just a second.
And I know on the as a standing item on the agenda, there's usually a legislative report, and Alan Sorum kind of follows that. So to keep in touch with some of the things happening at the statewide level, there's kind of a liaison there. So you can tune into those meetings on the radio or go down and check them out and find them out there. Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
And have a safe trip back.
Thanks, Lori.